10. I'd just like to welcome everybody here to the Finance and Court meeting of the 13th of September. Special welcome to from the Tees of Portotago, Dave Faulkner, Kevin Winders and Kevin Connolly. Welcome along, gentlemen. Just a few formalities complete initially. I haven't been advised of any apologies today. Confirmation of agenda. It is as read, I believe. I've been advised of no change there. Any conflicts of interest? I don't think so. No public forum, and we'll leave the minutes to the later part of the meeting. So at this stage, I'd just like to welcome the people from Port Otago up to the front here to present the annual report. So welcome once again.
Who's driving it?
You're driving it?
I'll just stand up over there.
I'm not here for the next meeting, etc.
It's an internal.
Yeah,
out of the way.
Yeah,
would
Yeah, so welcome along, Dave and Kevin. I had a quick scan through your report last night, so we had a pretty solid result again for the past year, so we'll hand over to you.
Yes.
Alright,
here.
Just before I start, I'd just like to really acknowledge Jeff Plunkett's role in this report that I'm going to present to you today, and also his contribution to Otago over...
Sorry.
Is there a fine for that?
Must
be. Turn mine off. Yeah, Jeff's contribution for over 29 years with Port Otago, last 13 as CEO, and Jeff finished in that role on the 31st of June, so obviously was a big part of what I'm presenting to you. But also just to welcome Kevin, I think all of you have met, and Kevin took over the role of CEO on the 1st of July this year. And also with Stephen, I think you all know Stephen Connolly. So that's the team that we'll be presenting to you today. Pretty pleasing to be able to again stand up and present to you a report, which based a year where we've shown increased earnings from our operational activities. And that's something, an area that's been a bit flat over previous years. But this year, for various reasons as outlined in the report, that has picked up. So just the group profit, talked about there, and that's up 13%. And the revaluation gain, which I'll talk about later, was very, very similar to the previous year. So that hasn't influenced that percentage increase too much. The increase in cargo volumes, that's been great, as has the ship calls. And again, we'll break that down just in a little bit more detail. And that's after a few years where we've been pretty flat in those areas. But it's just that little bit of lift, and I'll explain that. Our Te Rapa project in Hamilton is going very well, and it's going very well since the end of this last financial year. Again, I'll talk further on that. And good progress in the channel deepening. We're well on track to completing our objectives there, and that's expected to be completed by December this year. So that's been a long project, but we're getting there. Just the financial results for the group as a whole, and as you can see, good increase in revenue and profit, and again I'll expand on those later. You'll note there's a tax adjustment there, which is a little bit different to the previous year. That was brought about due to the unwinding of a deferred tax position that we'd previously taken in years before. So you'll see that the tax we paid the previous year and this year are about $2.5 million difference. And that's the explanation for that. But all of that contributed to a 13% increase in the Port Otago group profit. Where did that come from? And just a breakdown here showing where it is and where the pre-tax earnings came from through Port Otago, Port Chalmers, revaluation gains. And you can see there, just very, very similar to the previous year. So the 43.2 comparing with the 40.9 for the previous year. And again, further details on that. Just if we look at our earnings over the past 5 years, the yellow there is the revaluation gain, and the operational earnings is the blue, and then the grey box is the LPC share sale, which obviously was a one-off. But it's just pleasing to see that gradually starting to ease up, and we're very keen to see that continue. Just on the financial position, total assets of $534 million. Now that's up from $497 million last year. I suppose you could say it's a bit of a milestone. We've gone over $500 million in terms of total assets, and that's a milestone. Equity ratio, it's still very, very steady at 81% and very, very conservative. So we're certainly well placed from that point of view. Borrowing's up slightly, and that's just due to our ongoing development of Tarapa and other developments in Chalmers properties, again, which I'll talk about, and also just the continuation of the new generation project, which is it does cost a few dollars. Increase in returns on shareholders' funds. That's again up, and that's not a bad measure of just where we are in the business. Shareholders' equity, again, that 81%, very, very, very good, and the amount of equity there just rising slowly, so that's good. Dividends, we pretty consistent dividend payment. I think the payment for the current year has been made or about to be made. It's very close to being done, so that is certainly in keeping with our SCI, and that's what we're delivering to our shareholders. Now just look at Port Otago in terms of our operations, and just while we're on that photo, that's our new tug, Arahi, towing our, and it is a new barge for Port Otago, but it's a very old barge. It's a split bottom barge. Carries about 600 cubic metres of material, and that's the new tug that arrived from Turkey midway through this past year. And so the Port Otago result, that EBITDA growth that we're showing there, that has been really flat for a number of years, if not going slightly downwards, but it's great to see that has turned around. And if we go on to the next slide, just the reasons why that we've been able to turn that around. Container volumes up, and that's driven by imports and exports. And, you know, it is surprising the amount of imports that's coming through the port these days. A lot of dairy products require imports, and that's certainly lifting those volumes. So between the exports and imports, they're collectively up. Conventional cargo considerably up, and that's very much driven by logs. And it's for the third year in a row, I think it is, we've had a record volume of logs going through. And a lot of those are going through the Dunedin in the upper harbour, so that's all taking away the trucks from going down to the port. And that is working out very well. And I think I've commented before, the work we've done on the yard there is just a lot tidier looking than perhaps what it had been in past years. And you know, so that part of it has worked very, very well. Vessel arrivals up 7%, and 79 cruise vessels amongst that. This past year we had 8 cancellations, and that wasn't necessarily due to weather in Dunedin. It's often weather over in Fiordland or other reasons like that have led to those cancellations. I'm not sure just finally what the count was just for Dunedin weather, but it wasn't a big part of that 8 cancellations. And again, I'll talk further about the forward looking of cruise ships, which is very, very positive. The next generation project, this has been going for a number of years now. We've spent a fair bit of money on getting all the consents for this, about $5.5 million, but we're now heading towards the end of it. It's included the channel deepening, which is ongoing, the warehouse expansions that we've completed last year, extension to the multi-purpose wharf, which is shown there in the green, and we've just recently let a contract to Head of Construction to do that, and they are now getting on site and starting work on that. We bought Arahi and Hapuka as part of that, so it's just interesting that over this period we've spent about $30 million year to date on works associated with new generation, $5.5 million on consents, and we've got about $22 million to go. So if you add that up, that's about $57 million. Now that really has positioned the port to look well into the future for servicing the needs of the area and the needs of the ships that are like to call here in Otago. And I think the other important thing about it is the consents that we've got to actually operate. So all the maintenance consents required to keep the channel clear, the infill that falls down on the sides, we've got 25-year consents to take that away and dispose of it out at sea. And that's really needed to keep the channel opening. And we are going down to 14 metres at the moment for depth. We have got a consent to go to 15. So we believe we've, after a lot of work, we're well positioned to go into the future and provide what's required for the region. The port infrastructure, I think some of you came down and saw the cruise facility that we've built. It's a lot better and a big improvement on the tents and things like that or the canopy that we had down there. Certainly looking at it and seeing the passengers coming through, it's a far better area. We do use that in the off season for timber and other works, but that's been a huge improvement to just the way how the cruise passengers are received. But with the size of ships coming in and 5,000 people coming out, we certainly do need that facility. We have to keep up our plant replacement program on straddles, and we've got two new straddles that we've ordered during the financial year we're talking about. They're actually getting assembled right at this very moment. So they've arrived and they're getting assembled, and they're the diesel electric ones, the latest ones we can get. And we've also ordered two new empty container handlers, and they're coming on track as well. And one thing that some things get obsolete, you may recall of the green and cream container front crane right down the very end, a lot smaller than the other two big ones. Well, that is no longer there. We've had that dismantled and taken away. It took part over about 4 or 5 weeks. It was a very quick and efficient operation. So it takes a lot longer to put them up than it does to take them down. So just in the cruise ship area, this is what we're seeing for the year ahead. 79 or the year before, 89 for the forecast for this current year, 113. And the average size of for passengers is increasing all the time. So we're talking up to 250,000 passengers that would pass through the terminal in the 18-19 forecast year. That demand just seems to be growing and growing. That large ship, the Ovation of the Seas, I think we've got 5 calls this year?
Six.
6 calls. So, and often we've got 2 cruise ships in on a day. And that does drive the need for us having to extend that wharf extension we're doing at the moment. Because with 2 cruise ships, you really can't handle a container ship without that extension. So, it's good to see, and obviously the community benefit greatly from the cruise ship for calling in there. Safety, continued focus on safety, and unfortunately our main lag indicator, the total recordable injury frequency rate, has deteriorated slightly, and we're not happy about that. And Kevin and his team are renewing our approach to safety, and the mantra or the words that we're building it all on is everyone will go home healthy and safe. So that's just what we want to do. If they come to work, they're going back home in a healthy condition and safely. And the board's fully supportive of the new approach that Kevin's driving on with these new initiatives. The Port Noise Environmental Committee does probably a lot more than that, in that it really is the conduit for Port Otago to keep the community informed of what is going on around the port. With the wharf extensions coming up, that is something that's been discussed quite a bit. What we're showing there is actually not Port Otago, that's actually Littleton. And that's the old wharf on that end, the new wharf is there. So there is a number of piles we've got to drive, 138 piles, and that will be done at a time, Monday to Fridays, and during normal working hours. That's incorporated into the contract we have. The piles are on their way from China now, and they'll be starting to drive those from about November on. So that's quite a big project. It's one that we're fully discussing with the community, and we'll continue to do that. Just the other activities of the Port Noise and Environment Committee. We are putting in additional noise monitoring in, and they'll be installed around Kerry's Bay and the wharf area. These are real-time noise recordings, so that's a bit of a change to perhaps what we've had in the past. The other thing is the community decided that on some murals, and you see them there, we went out to the community and they decided on what they'd like to put on as a mural. That's on A Shed where the cruise ship is on, and this is what we've got here. So these are just getting organised to be done.
Weather permitting, September, later the month, and hopefully finished by October.
And the other thing is they're working on continuing with that Flagstaff Hill problem we've got. Disposal of the material is probably the biggest problem, but we have got to get on with that, and we've got plans afoot to do that. And that will open up that roadway around to Back Beach as it should be, and do away with the containers over there. And just moving on to Chalmers Properties, this is the new steel and tube building. I think the last time we spoke we had a picture of the sort of the warehouse behind. So this time we've shown it does look a little bit tidier than the warehouse, but that facility is all open and working very, very well. The Chalmers Property, the rental income is up slightly. The valuation, it actually went up $34 million. But we'd spent $19 million basically investing in new assets like steel and tube, the developments we're doing up in Hamilton, and quite a major upgrade we did at the end of the tenancy in Auckland and Rosedale Road. So that's what gave rise to a net $19.9 million increase in valuation. The WALT, the weighted average lease term, that's just changed slightly from down from 10.6 to 9.9. As you'd expect, as the year goes by, that does reduce a bit, but as we sign up new tenants, that will increase. Steel and tube, we've talked about, that's all done. And yes, a major refurb for one of our old tenancies up in Auckland at Rosebank Road. We've spent quite a bit of money getting a new tenant into there. But that's all happening. We went up and visited that, very happy client, and that seems to be heading pretty well. So the Chalmers Properties, small increase in revenue, pretty consistent result as you'd expect for a business that has a lot of long-term leases. They don't change much from year to year. This doesn't include Hamilton, I'll be talking about that separately, so this is just our leasehold portfolio. Balance sheet, again, just reflects that $34 million value of increase in property, as I've explained, and equity in that all looking pretty good still in Chalmers Properties. And the portfolio, no significant split, it's the 1% sort of up and slightly down, but no significant split in where our assets are held. So just moving on to Tarapa Gateway, so it's the area on the orientation route. That's what is owned by Port Otago up there through Chalmers Properties. And this is where the development is at the moment. You can see there's a lot of sold signs. In fact, when you look at that, there's not a lot of left. There's land developed, ready to sale, and we've really got to be looking at doing the next stage of development. Down in these two blocks, 39, 38, there's a few up on the off Clem Newby Drive up there, probably that big one on the corner, 26. That proposed road hasn't been built yet, so we're starting to get well down in terms of what's available for sale. And I'll talk a bit more the increase in interest and sales that have happened even in this financial year. So in the last financial year, we had a good increase in settlements. 3 hectares were settled, compared with 1.3 hectares the previous year. We're also building, and I think we talked about this last year, 6 small warehouses that are available for sale or lease, and we've also got 2 larger warehouses in the same category for sale or for lease. And the smaller ones have been finished, and there's good interest in those, and the larger ones are just really getting going. But so far this year, we've only had 2 months gone. We have committed sales for another 4.5 hectares, which is an income of $11.5 million. So that's over and above what we've had in the previous time. So all of a sudden it just has got that critical mass. And there is quite a move from businesses out of Auckland down to the Hamilton area. We are one of them. Tainui have got that development over Ruakura, and there's a lot of interest in there. But people are finding it's very close to Auckland now as the motorways get finished. And also to source labour is just a little bit easier in Hamilton than it is in Auckland. So that seems to be affecting us pretty well in a good way down at Tarapa there. So just looking forward, nice to start the new year with a good news story. This is the Oceania plant at Glenavy. You may recall that was completed 2 or 3 years ago, and it has been pretty successful. So they're investing another $245 million there, building the second stage, and that'll be producing UHT and infant formula lines. Now, previously we've tried to get that all that cargo, the in and out of that cargo. For various reasons it's been heading up to Christchurch, but we've managed to now to secure that, so that's coming now through Port Otago, and it's a good thing to start the new year on with a bit of extra cargo. Obviously makes sense when you think about Glenavy, it's a bit closer to Dunedin than Christchurch. So with Kiwi Rail, Dynes and Icon, they'll be integral players in getting those boxes from Glenavy down to Port Otago. And I think the first one's arrived.
First box was packed yesterday.
So it's that hot off the press. So that's just started, and that's a good news story to start the new year. Just on the outlook, like Oceania, there are a number of other new opportunities that we're actively pursuing. And we're just getting those container numbers up will be good. The next generation is well underway, as I said, and the completion of that, sort of late next year, will be a real milestone and positions the port well going into the future. We've had that I've talked about that positive demand for the land in Hamilton, and that's excellent, and we see that continuing. There's nothing that's really going to stop that, so there'll be a bit more work there. And the safety refocus with everyone will go home healthy and safe. That is a key part that we're wanting to really get in behind as a board. And the other thing is that we want to put a bit further effort into being good neighbours with our neighbours down at Port Chalmers. So, Mr Chairman, that's all I have to say. I'm very happy to take questions.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much for that report. It's certainly a good solid result, and it's also a result that looks to the future with a lot of reinvestment in the port. So, questions? Councillor Deacon.
Firstly, through you, Mr Chairman, thank you, David, for that excellent presentation. Fact-filled, interesting, right up to date, and very reassuring. I picked up your emphasis several times through the way you presented to us, your enthusiasm for being a good neighbour, a good part of the town, trying to lessen the burden on the people who live at Port Chalmers and Sawyers Bay and Careys Bay and maybe across at Portobello from the effect of your growing presence. That pile driving exercise sounds like a nightmare for the people who live within the sound boundary of your operations. And I'm leading up to the question of this, because you just finished by saying that you were keen to develop the relationship that you have with your immediate communities. I wonder whether your board has considered putting aside a percentage of your dividend each year to a mitigation and amenities fund for those communities, which could be expended on the advice of a committee like you who have already, residents, company representatives, maybe some technical experts as well, who could annually or 6 monthly meet to decide on how to invest in those communities to make them comfortable, to make them secure in where they live, and to make them feel good about themselves as communities. Now, it might not necessarily be noise control. It could be any kind of amenity which is going to improve the quality of life in that community. Have you considered such a thing? Because I'm sure that we, as your shareholder, would be very thoughtful and positive about the idea of a percentage of your annual dividend going into a fund for those communities. End of question. Sorry it took so long.
All right, well, just one clarification. You used the term your dividend.
Yeah.
Is that your dividend? Or
yeah.
We don't get a dividend.
It's the dividend I'm talking about.
The dividend.
It's so 7.5 mil.
Yeah. So you'll be promoting a percentage of that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I think that's a very good point. And these are all the things that, as a board, that we're looking at sort of, how can we do better in this area? So I think that's very much one thing that we could consider. And in a way, what we're providing is perhaps the committee, whatever the committee's called, with some cash to spend.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's really what's summing up what you're saying.
To invest on themselves, on their communities, on their amenity, on their comfort.
And the mural is a little bit part of that. We said, well, we'll pay for it. What do you want? So that's the approach that we're trying to engender.
Thanks, David.
Councillor Moores.
You've got quite a remarkable balance sheet and compared with many such trading companies in the local government sector. $433 million worth of equity, only $100 million worth of liabilities is extraordinary. And last year you made a profit of $38.7 million and the year previous to that $34.1. And yet your dividends to the Otago Regional Council are pathetic. $7.5 million the year previous, $7.8 million this year. Would there be any resistance from the Port of Otago were the Otago Regional Council to take a much more significant dividend from your company, given its extraordinary balance sheet, the profits that you make, and the level of equity that you retain in your company? That's the first question. The second question is, your balance sheet now seems to be generating more interest in the Chalmers property side than the Port of Otago side. That seems to have the greatest amount of equity, I think, from reading your balance sheet at the moment. Oh, no.
Okay.
Greatest amount of assets, certainly.
Yeah.
And potential.
Yeah.
And yet, according to your annual report, you didn't actually reach target with Chalmers property. I would have thought it would have been impossible not to reach target with property, frankly, north of Taupo, but according to this, you didn't. Can I understand why that would be as well, that you didn't reach the target in terms of Chalmers Property Limited last year?
Right. Perhaps can we go back to the first question?
Yeah, sure.
So first of all, I just the profit we report includes something like $20 million worth of asset revaluation. So that's not a cash item. What we pay in dividend is determined by cash.
Nevertheless, it still goes onto your equity.
I can just finish.
Sure.
And so, as I've also outlined, we have quite a big requirement for cash in doing these infrastructural developments that I've talked about, and we pay probably around about 50% of our cash profit out to ORC. In the board's view, with what we've got ahead or have had ahead of us, and we've still got going, that is probably a reasonable sort of figure, particularly for an infrastructural company which has pretty big peaks in the cash requirement to keep the capital assets going and up to date.
But your debt to equity ratio is minuscule in comparison with most public trading companies.
Mm. It's trading well.
Yeah.
Yes, which means that surely you can take on more debt and provide more dividend.
Well, you could do.
Okay. The second question. You've got in your own annual report here that you didn't reach your target for Chalmers Property Limited growth in terms of EBITDA or the earnings before interest and taxation.
And that's in Chalmers Property, not in Hamilton.
No, that's what I'm asking, for Chalmers Property.
Yes, the Chalmers Property Group, one of the issues we have is when we did the projection, we didn't factor in the revaluation increase, so we were working on a lower average assets base. But with the revaluation increase, our average assets actually increased, so the EBIT over those average assets was a higher base than what we previously projected.
So are you saying that the reason you didn't achieve your target was because you didn't get your accounting right?
Yes. No, I'm saying we didn't factor in a revaluation increase of $20 million into our target.
Michael, this year we're budgeting for our properties to stay at the same value for the 12 months as we did the year before, because we just don't know what's going to happen with property prices. So we budget to have zero property movement on the book, and effectively we set the target in the SCI as our return over that book as it stands at the beginning of the year. What Stephen's saying is the market's moved and there's a $20 million reval that we didn't expect, which is great. Good problem to have. We've got $20 million on paper, more than we thought. So you add that to the total assets, but your actual profit targeted hasn't changed. We hit our profit, but you've got a bigger divisor. So your maths work that you've got a lower return. So yes, we did technically miss, but it's a good problem to have because we've got a $20 million reval. So there's no cock up in the accounting. It's just the maths.
Okay, so what do you
unfortunately, I'm the new guy, so it's been $20 million after all these years. You know, I could be turning up next year and looking, saying, explaining why there's a $10 million loss as that reval's unwound. Because all it is a book entry.
Okay.
And I'm going to have to explain that. Hopeful I won't. And it's zero.
You will at some point.
But if it's positive, that's still that'll be an amazing.
No, but the market's worked in your favour.
Yes. Only on paper, because we haven't sold anything.
No, well, yes, but it certainly has a potential dividend to us.
It's like you owning your house and then going out and saying, no, it's worth an extra $200,000, so I'll go borrow some more money and buy a boat.
Gee, welcome to New Zealand.
Yeah, and that all goes well when you're sailing along going uphill, and it's going fine. But as soon as it turns around, it unwinds pretty quick.
Mm.
And the port, the port's capex continues to be chunky on a regular basis. So if we get in a position where we can't invest in the future to replace our dredge, something chunky like that, that'll be a problem for us.
Yeah,
so I think a prudent approach is quite good.
I don't think that balance sheet suggests you can't invest in something like a dredge.
No, it gives us the wherewithal to do that. A business critical piece of asset that we need to maintain our longest channel in New Zealand.
I think
that's a very prudent position for us to be in.
I think your dividend is very low.
Must move on. Councillor Moon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I comment first and then there's a couple of questions. First, congratulations on the last 12 months and also the positive vibes going forward. Just on that, with the Oceania arrangement, are you able to share with us the volume split between road transport and rail with that additional volume of freight? Have you got any idea? Just
yeah, I have a little bit. It's a wee bit of a... It's over 3 years. Oceania has spent a lot of money, $245 million, building two new lines and a massive big warehouse, so they can effectively, in 3 years' time, be self-sufficient, loading their own containers with finished products, then send them down to us on rail. It needs to be road bridge down to either Omaru or Studham, and then it's railed down to Port Otago. And then the idea is the imports come in for their lactose straight off the port onto rail, backloaded straight back to them, and the reverse happens. So over 3 years we'd expect them to be completely self-sufficient, containers coming up, containers going back, which is really cool. In the interim, they've spent $245 million on new kit, and I've actually started up a meat plant in Tiara, $88 million worth. They're bloody hard work to get right in the first year. So effectively what we've said is we'll help you by devanning and warehousing in Dunedin and Sawyers Bay to get you up and running, and as you get more confident, we'll do less and less for you to become just a seamless rail operation and road bridge. So it'll just transition over period, how they come up to speed really.
Okay, that's good, thank you. The other question I had was around the additional noise monitoring around Kerry's Bay. I'm just trying to understand, that's great that that's happening, but was that triggered by the tweak in the statement of intent, or was that essentially, from Port Otago's point of view, the need to have more accurate data from around the noise data from around that Kerry's Bay community? Can I just could you just share with us the reasons
well,
around?
Well, from where I sit, I think it's the latter. You're pretty new to this.
Yeah, no, it's quite exciting this because I think Mary's sitting down the back here. One of the things we've had is when there's been a noise in the community, you hear a bang in the community and they ring up and say there's a noise. It's been very hard for our shift leaders to find out who was driving the machine in what area and what actually was the noise. So this new technology actually, it's synchronised, so when the noise is recorded in Kerry's Bay, for example, we get the actual noise recorded on the port itself, and it's time-stamped, and they're all aligned. So we'll be able to play it back and hear the noise, and our guys will be able to figure out whether that was an empty container put on top of an empty container, or whether it was an over-revving of a straddle, or whether it was the ship. And that'll give us a clue to track down who was actually doing it. And we've got another bit of software that the board approved last year, $750,000 worth of telemetry software that's going into all our straddles and side loaders that tracks every straddle and side loader on the port by operator. So that's due to be finished by Christmas. So we'll be able to then go get the noise, listen to it, and then look on our SCADA system and find out it was straddle number 31 was in that area and it was Joe Bloggs driving it. So in the past, when a community's been able to ring in, we've said we'll go talk to the troops, and that could be 30, 40 guys or girls. So now we can narrow it right down, and then we can have training. We can coach that person to find out, and maybe we'll get that person to ring up the community and have a chat to the neighbour that they've annoyed. So I think in 6 months' time, we'll have some better tools to be able to respond. So it's quite good for me. I can look forward to driving that.
Okay. Two other questions. One was Tyrone. Is there anything you can share with us where
yep.
the...
Beck have been doing their work and they with a wee bit of delay getting the final profiles of the sand, because there's two sorts of sand in the harbour. There's a smaller grain and a heavier grain, and if you've got a lot of the heavier grain, you could make the slope of the beach slightly steeper, and when they work through that, there's not enough of the largest size sand. So we've gone back to the smaller grain sand that is prevalent in the harbour. So a bit of a wild goose chase, but we tracked that one down. They're due to have their final report to us at the end of the month, and we're arranging with Des Smith and the community group first week in October to have a meeting after we've sent them the report. So we're close.
Very good. And the last question is about State Highway 88. Is there anything that, on the basis that the question is it fit for purpose in terms of the increasing volume of traffic, but probably more relates to heavy traffic, but is there anything that we can do to put more pressure on NZTA if you feel that that would be of assistance going forward in terms of any capital improvements? Because obviously it's critical to the port, critical to the community, and just wondering, I'm just looking at Councillor Kempton over there, through the Regional Land Transport Committee, is there anything that we should be saying to help assist improvements in State Highway 88?
Well, any assistance is always welcomed. Port Otago receives the biggest portion of its freight by rail of any port in New Zealand, so it's around about 68-70%. It's in that order. So when we say, with the increased volume, I think that percentage will probably still be retained. So the increase in traffic is probably not going to be as much as you perhaps might imagine. But, any improvements would always be welcomed down there by us and the other users on the road, because it does make it safer. And, so any help you can give would be appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kempton.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just by way of a supplementary comment with respect to the road, of course, the second half of the cycleway is proceeding relatively quickly through the process. That is pretty significant in terms of safety. And I think there's been 2.5 million, don't quote me on the number, about 2.5 million safety improvements which are currently going on the road. So there are certainly some constraints, and I know it's NZTA's road, I know I'm probably speaking for this, but there are certainly some constraints, but within those constraints there's actually ongoing investment. Just a point I'd like to make, thank you very much for the report. I think we need to temper our thinking about dividends and so on by thinking about what we use them for. We use them to cover operating expenses. We use them to cover the general cost, about half of the general cost of operating this council. The one thing we therefore need above all else There's utter reliability.
Consistency.
Right? We cannot have a year in which we don't get one, because we're in deep trouble. Now, my view is, and thank you for this, I think that Port Otago have read us well, and I think they service us well in the way in which they control that business to produce very steady revenue stream. And I think we need to keep that in mind. A background of that, of course, is that part of a steady dividend stream relates to the amount of risk there is in the business. And, of course, the amount of risk there is in the business relates to the amount of debt in the business. So it isn't just a matter of looking at one corner of the business in isolation. There are a number of factors that we need to keep in mind. The question, and to be able to say that there, and I think that we're probably operating within the current terms of the statement of intent, around 50% of taxpayer profit as a dividend is a very, very common private sector approach. 10% return on shareholder funds, given the asset base, the debt and equity situation, is actually not too bad. You can get that up if you take more debt. If you take more debt, you've got more risk. And we then might end up in a little trouble trying to pay our operating expenses. I think that it's being, from both sides, it's being read very well, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Woodhead.
Firstly, thank you, Councillor Kempton. You answered one of my questions and just rounded out that picture for us. But I'm going to make a couple of comments first if I can with the Chairman and pick up something that Mr Faulkner highlighted when he opened up his address, and just acknowledge Jeff Plunkett's role in the position that this company is in. We've got a media release that's going to recognise Jeff's input go out today, and we're inviting him along to the next council meeting just to join us for a few minutes in public and then and join us over lunch, so just so that councillors are all aware. And there was a function recently that Councillor Kempton represented council at and recognised Jeff's input. Over the best part, 29 years, 30 years, that is significant. Make that point for a start off. good result, gentlemen. Bit of growth in port operational stuff. The productive hinterland's going to continue to yield a little bit more every year, and to hear the Oceania story is fantastic. It's right on our back door, so we own it, really. So that's good to hear. And there's other little, you know, exciting potential developments around South Canterbury, Otago and Southland in the you know, potentially come our way over time also. Couple of questions. Are logs at a sustainable level? Is the thick end of a million tonnes about where it's going to sit on a consistent basis? Understanding the market will go up and down a little bit and affect the flow. That was the first question. Second question, with Tarapa flowing out the door as quickly as it is, and Dave, you've already intimated some pretty reasonable sales, and we can see the per square metre rate has lifted a wee bit in the last 12 months, but in the first few months of this year, what's the life of it now? Is it, you know, how many years is it going to take us to bank it and be completely finished? And around that, you're suggesting we'll keep ownership of a couple, which I think is a great idea. What percentage is the board comfortable with owning longer term, you know, to grow where a property portfolio is sitting around the 330 mil? Have you got any thinking longer term on where that might be as a result of the opportunity that Tarapa delivers?
All right, well, just to wrap it, you know, it's a bit of crystal ball gazing to say how long it's going to go out, but, you know, my thinking, I don't know if Kevin can correct me, I think it's a 5 to 8 years. These developments do slow down a bit towards the end when you get a pepper pot of sections left over. Is that as good a guess as it is?
No, I think that's a good answer, I think.
So that would be the time frame. They slow to start, they go through a real peak, and then they do tail off a bit at the end, just with those last few sections. In terms of, we really haven't put any constraints around what we might want to do in Tarapa in terms of owning the land. What we are finding is it's very hard to actually bring to the market a property for lease unless you've actually got the land to start with. And that's the opportunity we've got to. So where we want to increase our leasehold, it is a little bit easier to do it through Tarapa, where we own the land anyway. And you know, that's why we've just been doing those. A few years back, $300 million was my sort of figure of equity for Chalmers, but you know, when it's going up $20 million a year with revaluation, that soon has been bowled off. And that is something that the board does need to address. You know, how big do we want it to be? And you know, $300 million could be, well, $330 million we are now. It's, when you sit there and things continue as they are, you'll be $400 million pretty quick. So no, that's a fair comment, and it's something that I think we've got to keep it in, and it's something that should be reflected in the SDI.
Yeah, thank you. Logs.
The million tons is getting up towards probably about as much as we can handle. It's certainly pushing the boundaries, and we certainly couldn't have done 1 million tonnes without having the Needham going. There's a break point where they either head north to us or head south to Southport. See, Southport are doing a couple of million tonnes. So there's a big chunk of the logs going there. And those figures seem to be now settling down to be quite consistent. So I think we are at a period, and it is determined by probably three things. What's the price of the log in China? What's the shipping rate, and what's the exchange rate?
Mm.
Now, it's just happened over the past period. Those have all aligned. And the government is getting the best price ever for their logs here in New Zealand. Because freight rates were very low for a while. Currency was good. The China rate wasn't particularly high, but with those conversions, they were, and that's probably what's given rise more than anything else to the volumes that are going out at the moment.
Thank you.
Councillor Neil.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations on a very good result and a well-presented report. And I endorse the comments of Councillor Kempton. Just a small question, and I'm back to Taroni Beach and now Kevin Hughes, the new CE. Because of the time elapsed, and we've had a considerable time now, there has grown a bit of distrust over the whole issue, which is a bit sad. And I want to know, Kevin, for you to try and build up that trust again, and perhaps even liaise even more closely, and I may not be right up with the play, but there certainly has been that. So we need a commitment for a satisfactory result, and that this bringing Becker in isn't. Some people say, oh, they'll bring Becker in, and then they'll come back with the results, and it won't be able to do half what we want to do, or even. Now I realise that there will probably be compromises up the track, but this has gone on a long time and we must get a good resolution to it.
Well, I think the last meeting that I attended, which was a joint meeting with Stephen, I think you were there, David Cowell and others, I think Andrew, you were at one of those meetings as well.
Yep.
You know, I think where we got to at that was very, very positive. And certainly what the community representatives were saying to us, they were very positive about where we've got to. The Becker report has taken a bit longer than we intended, and I think Kevin's explained that about grain sizes and a few technical things. And I think the community also recognised it's not a matter of just going in and putting a few rocks in and here and there. It's got to be a consentable consent. And I think they realised that at that meeting and now are on board with the process we're following. So I must admit I haven't had a call from the community for some time. So
they must be happy.
Yeah, but what I am doing is certainly getting Kevin more involved in it. Dez has got my phone number and he's used it lots of times. You know, he hasn't used it of recent times. So that's my barometer.
I just... As long as you haven't worn them down.
No, I think it's the other way around.
I think it's good engagement. They are a bit frustrated that it's taken this time. I agree with you. And they're looking forward to seeing the report. And I've had a go through with Becker where they're at the moment. They haven't finished their work. I've learned a lot more about it. And it does need to be done properly or else it'll be pointless. So I think we'll be in a position in the first week in October to be able to give them options and at that stage they'll have something to start digesting.
And from what I can see, it was, that report is broadly in line with where we ended up at the last meeting in terms of position of the things and depositing of sand, etc. There's a couple of things that perhaps they suggested may not work, but I think that's all covered in the report.
Thank you.
Well, finally, one question from me. At our Audit and Risk Committee, reasonably recently, we had a discussion about insurance, and given what's happened with Ports of Wellington, I'll just ask you guys the question, like, are you quite happy with the level of insurance that the port's got, given what's happened up there?
Was it last meeting we talked about that? The board looked at that just recently as the last meeting.
Yep.
And yeah, obviously taking into account the Wellington situation and things, and Wild and Dunedin might say, well, we don't get any quakes like White Wellington, but Christchurch never did either.
Yeah.
So no, that's very much. And Stephen, have you got anything to add?
We're about to go through our insurance renewal, so that'll be another evaluation of our asset values and underlying insurance valuation. Also considering options of whether the London market might be able to provide some material damage business interruption insurance for us as well, just so that there was another large earthquake in New Zealand, and that facility wasn't no longer available, and what other options have we got, so we are kind of thinking why.
Yep, thanks for
that. Certainly been addressed.
Yep, good. Okay, I think that draws to an end. Oh, sorry, Cam. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have two questions to ask you around health and safety. Firstly, has it been hard to implement your new health and safety for your staff where everyone goes home healthy, safe, and you go home every day? And the second part, and I don't know if it's a line, but I'm thinking to myself about the fact that your logging trucks don't come down now, but you've got your passengers that come through from the cruise ship, they go through that lovely building you've got, and then they've got to look around, and it's sometimes a little bit hairy, you know, you might have a crane come around, something like that. How does it work? When they come off the cruise ship, do they become your responsibility, you know, like a health and safety point of view, when they're on your land and then they cross the road and they might go up to Port Chalmers, or is that sort of shared between Port Chalmers or, you know, Port Otago and the cruise ship? How does that part work?
I'll answer the second question. We are responsible for them. You know, that is a secure working area. So we are responsible for the safety of those. Now, that conflict you talked about has been high on our agenda, and that we've got some more plans for next season to actually, you know, eliminate the crunch points. There's a couple of very narrow points here. At the end of the day, we're still an operational port, and it's very hard just to shut it down. But, you know, on a cruise ship day, the containers put in a place to channel them in the right areas, but there are some pinch points, and we're doing a lot of work to actually reduce those. First question, you can answer.
I'll speak on the second one, Carmen. I think that's a great question.
Yeah.
And it's encouraging because we're putting a CapEx up to the board next month to spend some money around there. So indicated Scott's support for that.
We went for a walk that day.
It's very busy.
Yes. Wow, you know, this is just, and then the trucks go around the corner. Not that they fly, but you know, they come around the corner, and often you can't see. And I thought, gosh, it must be great. Now the logs not coming down that way; they're getting loaded through the rack. You know,
no, they're still coming down that way.
But they are still coming.
The log trucks are still coming down down the main street and turning right. So we haven't eliminated those. So it is a traffic management issue, and it's about barriers and safety. So you know, we're investing some money in that to make sure it's a bit cheaper than it has been. A lot of focus there. And to your first question, the port's done a good job in health and safety. Spent a lot of money on making sure the right measures have been taken and the money's been spent in the right areas. But effectively, it comes down to a cultural approach.
Yeah.
So the piece that I'm leading is around our leaders actually leading teams, and safety is the centre of our culture. Because we find if you get your safety right, your housekeeping right, productivity comes along with it. So it's just a bit of a change of focus.
Yes.
I'm a new guy, so I can bring some new initiatives.
Yes.
So how's it gone? We just started. And it'll be 3 to 5 years.
Yes.
It'll be a long journey, but well worth doing.
Councillor Digger, did you have one last question?
Councillor, just reminded me. David, I was pretty wowed by those numbers you put up on the screen going up to 3 years on the cruise ship industry. My first thought was when I saw that 2 years out, there'll be 250,000 people coming off those boats in a fairly compact period of time over peak summer.
Yes.
How widely known are those stats, those forecasts? I mean, thinking of the Dunedin infrastructure for day tours and all that sort of stuff, which is, I know is pretty robust, but boy, you're being a, they're going to have to handle almost twice as many people in 2 years' time.
But there's a lot of planning goes into that, and those figures, I have put those figures up previously here, and I'm sure that Pete has talked about it.
Yeah, there was a meeting last week on it.
There's regular meetings updating the local community and the all providers of the services of what their expectations, because, you know, as you can see, we know 2 years in advance what ships are coming and on the day. So, you know, on Christmas Day, usually, we know there's two ships in, and they plan accordingly. So I think we try to liaise
with... We're engaging with Enterprise Dunedin to facilitate that. So okay. The council's well aware of what's coming.
Good.
It's interesting, on the way home on Boxing Day this year, we called it the port, and just as the two cruise ships are leaving, it's an impressive sight. It's in a relatively small area, but to see two pulling out there is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a good discussion, so thank you, gentlemen, for your report. It's been a good, solid report, and I think the fact that it's looking to the future, hopefully it's onwards and upwards from here, so thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Let's take a wee short break.
Thank you.